members, welcome. It's Thursday, 9 o'clock. Welcome to the Portfolio Committee on Police. Also welcome to the National Commission of Police, General Sithole and his team. Members, I look forward to our last meeting of this term, although we will convene in 2 weeks now during the recess. Members, just in terms of our program for today, we've got the briefing on the supply chain management in the South African Police Service. It's a contested environment. There's a lot of issues that's been raised previously, so we'll give an opportunity for the police management to brief us on what's the developments and what's been done to ensure that that environment is properly managed and catered for. Then we will, the last item will be Reverend Bukile Biana. He's the chair of the ministerial task team. He will just give us a brief update on where they are. As we know, the international reference group already finalized their work, so we'll just get an update from him in terms of where they are, give an opportunity to members with regard to that. Then, members, there is a few matters in the public domain. Members asked that we deal with it, so we'll deal with it in the first slot and give the opportunity to members just to converse on those issues. I'll just first give an opportunity for the members to introduce themselves, and then I'll give the National Commissioner an opportunity, and then we'll go to those three issues. Thank you.
Madam Mohaitu, I'm going to talk to you about the committee and the committee. I'm going to talk to you about
the Goeiemôre, ek is Pieter Groenewald en ek sal dit van die komitee.
Matheo, nisi wa na bija mrado wa komitee ya chukurisa dolibu.
Hi, I'm Diane Kolobana, also a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Stan Banani, Kamuza Kelembele, member of the committee.
Well, members, there's two members who phoned me. There's a bit of rain in their way, but they will be with us shortly. General Sithole.
Morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Honourable Chair, our delegation today, as I just announced them, they will make the indication, is Lieutenant General, former Deputy National Commissioner, Asset Ndigam. Lieutenant General Masemuna, Deputy National Commissioner, Policy. Lieutenant General Mokwena, Divisional Commissioner, Supply Chain Management. Major General Lidwaba, Directorate of Private Crime Investigations. Major General Nisi, for the Divisional Commissioner, Legal Services. Major General City, Sithole, Division Supply Chain. Major General Vikalakala, Crime Intelligence. Major General L. Singh, Executive Support Office of the National Commissioner. Brigadier S. Pillay, Section Head, Strategy Development. You might know. Okay. Brigadier Lawrence, Division Legal Services. Colonel PM Grindy, Spokesperson, National Commissioner. Colonel K.B. Stain, Parliament Liaison Officer. And sorry, Chair, I will add Lieutenant General Zumane later. Deputy National Commissioner, Crime Detection. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner. Maybe the first issue, I just want to say that we start on a sad note. From the Portfolio Committee side, we want to convey our condolences to the South African Police for the killing of a police detective on Tuesday in New Brighton while they were on patrol. I saw the statement by the National Commissioner. I fully associate what is in his statement. Again, it's attack on the state, it's attack on the police, it's attack on a serving policeman, it's attack on a father and a serving South African citizen, and it's really totally unacceptable, and from the Portfolio Committee side, again, our condolences. Then the second issue relates to the mosque attack that happened a month ago in Verulam, in KZN. Now, the Muslim community is a very important community in our country, contributing to the whole spectrum of economic, social, and religious activities in the country. And there was a concern expressed by that community with regard to the progress with regard to that investigation. It's a month. There hasn't been any arrest yet. There were also some concerns with regard to the family liaison. From the portfolio committee side, it is a dilemma if there is attack in a mosque. We also saw this morning in Malmesbury the attack on a mosque, and two people were killed. The police actually acted, and the perpetrator was killed. But it's really a concern to us because it shows that there is also maybe, especially in the Berlin case, where there might be other motives that we haven't seen in the South African context before. And there's also some concerns within the Muslim community and an anxiety that copycat and similar attacks might spread. So it's important that there should be, from the police's side, I think, the necessary priority dealing with those items and ensuring that there's confidence with regard to the matter. Of course, it's also an intelligence matter. And I think this morning's attack also indicated that it was a foreign citizen that was involved in it. The initial reports are confirmed. So, General Sithole, maybe if we can just get now feedback on the progress with regard to the Virala matter, and maybe also just if there's anything on this morning's attack, maybe just your views on it. General Sithole, you're welcome.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Chair. I think, firstly, Chair, by the nature of the case and the priority level, we ask the DPCI to take the case and give it the highest priority. At the present moment, the investigation is between the DPCI and CI. I will be affording Major General Lidwaba from DPCI to give a little bit more, but important is just to indicate that it's a diverse case, and it involves quite a lot of issues. Some of them are national security, that is in nature, but she will talk to that. This one, this morning, yes, Chair, the report given is correct, but from an accurate point of view, the two deceased who were attacked and killed, one of them is a Somalian, and the attacker is also a Somalian, and therefore the intelligence side, they still on the scene with DPCI, we have actually lifted the case to the same level of priority. At the moment, we haven't established any connection between the two incidents because of the fact that you've got two Somalians, the one, the victim, and the deceased suspect. We're also still getting deeper to see how it connects to with the Somali, that is, processes or maybe any conflicts that could be emanating therefrom. But they are still at the scene. They are still processing it. I think General Jacobs is giving us a constant progress because of the priority nature that we are looking at it with. And with your permission, Chair, can I give General Lidwaba the floor just to talk to the investigation? Thank you.
Thank you, National Commissioner. General Lidwaba.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Ministers. Thank you so much for the opportunity. On the 10th of May, just to give a little background, at about 14:39, I'm talking about 10th May 2018. Three unknown Asian males gained entry into the mosque at Main Road, Verulam, KZN. The intruders found three shy Muslim males praying inside the mosque. and attacked them with knives. The attackers further set alight two rooms, the architect's and the library. I would like to appraise the portfolio committee that the case is receiving the necessary attention. The investigation is continuing, but at this stage, we cannot divulge more because of its sensitivity. We are investigating one murder case, two attempted murders, and one arson. There are people of interest. The investigators will engage as the investigation progresses. We will not leave any stone unturned. We are optimistic that justice will be done in this case. We appealed to the mosque members, victims, families themselves to allow the investigations to take place. The investigators are busy now tightening the loose ends before any action is taken to bring the suspects to book. We also engaged the dedicated prosecutor. We are not doing it alone. I thank you.
Thank you, General Dawa, National Commissioner.
Yeah, Honorable Chair, maybe to just also try to bring it into a more simpler language. The moment you investigate a case with the complexity of this nature, if during the investigation you uncover a new network, and the moment is also a little bit terrible in nature, then you can't effect the arrest immediately because you must reconnect to the other network. Maybe that could be, that's mostly part of the delay because people are assessing this case as a straightforward case and they compare it with other cases. The one directive that I've also given is that let us close the gap with the family, especially the complainant. I think BPCI has now prioritized that. But also from the fact that the chair said the most communities are also important. I think one is also thinking of an outreach towards them so that we also talk to them and ensuring them about their safety. Because within the turnaround, we also have the spiritual crime prevention concept. So I think I would make sure that we reach out to them in that particular perspective. Thank you.
Yeah, no, National Commissioner, I think that's to be welcomed. It's important that the communication between the police and the local mosque communities are prioritized. Let's give the members opportunity. Honorable Groenewald, Honorable Kolobana, thank you.
Now, Chair, I just want to get clarity. You're dealing now with matters in the public domain.
Yes.
Yes. What I want to raise, Chairperson, is a matter about the firearms.
No, we're coming to that. Remember, I said at the beginning, there's three issues. We're dealing with issue two. So we're going to deal with this issue, and then we're coming to issue three.
Okay, so you're going to deal with the firearms after this issue?
Yes.
Okay, right.
Right from the bottom.
For my own clarity, when the Verulam mosque attack happened, there were obviously reports flying around about what the attackers had said, and the story came out that people believed them to be Egyptian. Has that at all been confirmed, or is that also on the back burner? You know, lots of stuff goes around in an instance like this, and I'd rather hear it from the source's mouth. Thank you.
Right. Any other member on the second issue? Honorable Mulubatsi.
Thank you, Chair. Let me, from the ANC side, send our heartfelt condolences to the slain detective and the people in the mosque. And we are confident that the police will leave no stone unturned. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Right, members, that's everybody for item two. National Commissioner.
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chair. I think Chair would like to request that we rather be afforded the opportunity to give a full report, especially after the execution, Because also the question of the nationalities and who comes from where is also part of the network. And immediately after the intelligence, together with DPCI, has rounded off the matter, we'll then give a full report and just give accurate information. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner General Dwaba, for that feedback and commitment. Then we come to item three. One other issue in the public domain, I think since last Friday, was the Constitutional Court case in terms of the firearms, where a certain application was turned down and the status quo remains. If your firearm is late in terms of licensing, it must be handed over to the South African Police Service. Of course, various members asked that we address the matter, and also we received that in also correspondence asking for meetings from the various role players. So we'll give members opportunity to raise the issues. I think there was also media reports over the weekend, some challenges, some stations didn't take the respective firearms from members of the public. So we also need to clear the situation. What is the status quo? What is the ability of the police and so on? So, Honourable Grimwald.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as you said, there's quite a lot of confusion. And what I want to ask is that the Commissioner gives us some clarity on the process forward. I think the most important question is that whether we're going to get an amnesty period. We know that there was a process for amnesty with all the conditions in it. So I think that is the most important, if the Commissioner can give us an indication, and if the police is considering an amnesty, when are we going to talk about this? Because, let I say, Chairperson, as you said, I don't know what the communication is that the committee has such received, but we are contacted by many people that say that when they go to the police stations, to the DFO, and they want to hand in their firearms, then the DFOs tell them, well, they cannot take the firearm because they don't have a place of a safe place to store them. So that is really a big problem as far as that is concerned. So I will start with asking those pertinent question on how is the police going to handle the situation so that firearm owners can have clarity on the matter, please.
Yes, Chair. Mine is, if there's a person that is having the firearm, and in the meantime, he or she cannot renew the license, is that firearm illegal, and can that person be charged with an illegal possession of a firearm? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Obviously the ruling now says the old licenses are no longer valid, and so we're in a situation where about 400,000 legal firearm owners were advised to wait for the outcome of that court case, and they're now fearing suddenly they've become criminals. They have in some instances gone to try and hand them in, stations turn them away, and so what I think we're looking for here is what process will now be undertaken. SAFS cannot store 400,000 firearms. However, the minister in his submission referred to section 21, which says if a SAFS station gives the correct permit, then a firearm owner may keep the firearm in their safe, not use it, but it can be stored and until the new firearm license is issued. Of course, if they refuse, they must hand it in for destruction. Is that not the easiest way to overcome what seems to be this massive hurdle? It's a very confusing, and I'm being inundated with people saying, am I a criminal? What do I do? But if I hand it in, what if it's stolen? If I hand it in, I have no protection. I'm going to be attacked and killed. There's a huge
cloud at the moment, so I'm hoping the National Police Commissioner will give us guidance on the exact way in which people can now legally apply for licenses without being arrested and carted off in the back of a van. Because that's what people are fearing. Up until today, they're all saying, none of us, obviously they don't have criminal records because they wouldn't have a firearm license in that case. But they've done nothing criminal in their lives and now they're feeling they've done something terrible and they want to know, they want your guidance. Sorry to talk across the floor, Chair, but his guidance on how to, what the process now is going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Any other members?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my small input is just to say that we need to remember the background to all of this, which is that the way we ended up with this current conundrum and mess is because of the administrative shambles that the CFR has been chronically for years and years. Bottlenecks and backlogs and admin mishaps with the applications and renewals process. So that being the root, we know that a default to the default, quite frankly, is not going to be any kind of short or long-term solution. And the Concord ruling was unclear about what the way forward would be, given that its ruling was to reinforce status quo. And so I guess to echo Honourable Calder Barnard, the real question now is whether, in fact, not even whether, because it's obvious what needs to happen, but what kind of interim special dispensation process is going to be put in place and managed by the SAPS in a way that's going to bypass and avoid the problems of the conventional system and the conventional processes, because that's was the roots and the background of the problem in the first place. I think the Section 21 proposal is one that is shared by several stakeholders from different quarters, and frankly would be in the interest of the SAPS itself, because even if the medium term solution is to work towards an amnesty, that's not going to happen anytime soon. And in the meantime, in theory, legally, anybody who does not have an up-to-date license as per the Concord ruling and has a firearm is technically in criminal possession. But we know for the large majority of those people, it's not their fault. They've been victims of a dysfunctional system. So it's about how do we marry the legal position and the practical reality of where we are and how we got here. And perhaps, Chair, if you'd be willing to indulge, it might be useful to then get just a brief input from some of the stakeholders in the firearms environment who are present, maybe just to have their say. Thanks, Chair.
Bailey, any other member? Thank you very much. National Commissioner?
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chair. I would only start by making just a one statement, and I'm going, with your permission, to afford General Masemola to outline the process that we're going to follow. I think, firstly, Chair, the Constitutional Court judgment did not declare anyone a criminal. And the outcome of this process has not been criminalized. And from the South African Police Service, we are not treating anyone as a criminal yet until crime is committed through the process, as we will be following it. And we are also going to make sure that whether it's police stations and all nine provinces, they don't apply a discretion to the court outcome that may negate in the process. And we will also expect a very high level of cooperation from those who are affected. But with your permission, General Masamuda will just outline the process that we're going to be following.
Thank you, General Stule.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Firstly, let one say, after the judgment, currently we do have a team of operators as well as our legal services looking and working on a process. By tomorrow, which is Friday, by end of business, at least we will have a directive going out to the provinces as to how should they deal with the process. And also, Honorable Chair, to say, I don't think the Constitutional Court judge, there is a confusion with the Constitutional Court judgment. I don't think there is. If there is, maybe, well, we are not aware of. But there is a judgment that has been passed, I think it was about the validity of certain sections of the Constitution, which the court then said those sections are not unconstitutional, so meaning that the judgment, I think that is clear. So, and the judge, I think, went further to say he doesn't expect that we are going to run around people and arresting people for illegal possession. The question asked by Honorable Molibat, that if you were in possession of a firearm license, which now the license has expired, are you going to be arrested? I think in the judgment it is said that no, they don't expect us as substitutes. And indeed, yes, we're not going to arrest anybody. We are in the process of outlining a process. What is known now, I think, to everybody and members of the public is that those people that are in possession of firearm licenses, that are in possession of firearms which were licensed but which have expired as of now, those firearms, they are actually illegally possessing them. But it doesn't mean we are going to arrest them. We are working on a process where we're going to say, well, this firearm be handed over, and from there we will chart the way process, the process way forward. And I think the law is clear as to what should happen. The process internally, how we are going to deal with this, the 9 provinces were for the last 3 days at a meeting at head office where we're clearing out all those processes. And well, we are not aware of where members of the public were chased away from the police station. But once they have cleared the process, there will never be such. And of course, if members of the public are handing in their firearms, there will be no problem. But also, Chairperson, remember, this process, this court judgment, have got nothing to do with amnesty. These two processes, they are not mixed, they are not related at all. So the process of amnesty is still on the go, as we are all aware. We are still patient there. But it is not related to this one. Maybe for other legally issues, but I can ask Kendall Fund if the expert in the field, he can just make some comments.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think as the National Commissioner indicated, and as General Smola said, we were in Pretoria now for 3 days, in consultation with our legal services, and I don't want to preempt it at this stage, so there's a lot still behind the scenes to do. We're dealing with where there are concerns raised in the various provinces, where there are complaints, and we got our own internal things out to say, look, we must receive these firearms. But I think by tomorrow afternoon, everything will be clear in consultation with our legal services. So to discuss a lot of things, what are we going to do, how things are going to work, it's a bit premature at this stage. But by tomorrow, it will be out, as the general indicated.
National Commissioner.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The directive I've given has been that the circular must be out not later than tomorrow afternoon because of the agency of the matter. In actual fact, the assurance that I was got from General Masemula is that that circular could be issued by this afternoon, but my deadline not later than tomorrow. And then secondly, Chair, I think I would like to propose that our approach should also be guided by one of the seven logics of philosophy: make peace with the past so as it doesn't spoil your present. We don't want to handle this process from a defensive mode because it might make members negative. I want to appeal for a positive spirit towards the court judgment. And we've been here to the portfolio committee with firearms stakeholders. We had a good relationship before. We still have it. So we are going to handle this matter with care. While we'll be guided by the legal process, we'll still be open for input and engagement, especially from the side of the portfolio committee, because the portfolio committee will play a middle ground. And we will also still engage with stakeholders. One of the other things we want to do is just to improve the communication so that if we issue directives and say, this is what we're going to do during this time, then we appeal for cooperation for everyone during that particular period. And we are also aware of the current situation, the level of fear of the communities. We are going to treat this matter with the agency that it deserves. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We will now go to questions. The first few from my side. Some of the principles that we discussed during the various amnesty applications in terms of safe storage is still relevant, very much relevant. Now, there's three police stations, Belville, South East Pingu, and one in Mpumalanga that was excluded from that list. Can we get the undertaking or assurance from the National Commissioner that stations where there was, like in those three cases, big problems, they will be excluded from the process, and then also DFOs without the necessary vetting? It's going to be, again, highly problematic. If IRS stations with DFOs where it hasn't been vetted, and where the storage facilities, and especially the Article 13 stores are not in good state, it's not going to work. So the audit teams that was foreseen and the verification teams in the other process, will this be part of the rollout? Because the dilemma is, if you bring now, say, potentially 200,000 to 400,000 new firearms into the system, the potential for leakage and collusion is very, very high. I mean, we saw the arrest by SAPS of the three members of the flying squad in Germiston. The National Commission indicated the one lady in Limpopo who was part of the CIT team. So there is also that element in SAPS. So we want assurance that there will be extraordinary measures in terms of control. What's going to be the role also of your cluster commanders? And just those answers.
Yeah, again to the National Commissioner, he didn't refer at all to the proposed Section 21, which would enable owners to keep the firearm locked away, not use it, but have the permit until such time as the license can be processed. That seems to me to be eminently sensible. Could I have your input on that, please?
Thank you, Chair. To me, the duties of the DFOs are overloaded. I'm thinking, is there a way you can consider reviewing their duties? Because if they must do second-hand, liquor, license, and firearm licensing, to me it sounds a lot already, and maybe that's the reason why we have a lot of applications that are not being processed timelessly. Can you maybe look at reviewing it? Thanks, Chair.
What about you, Honourable Grunewald, and then Honourable
Thank you, Chair. Chair, now, firstly, I want to say that I welcome the fact that the Commissioner said that they will also consult with the stakeholders. I mean, that is also quite important that they exactly also know, because they are the people who have the members, and the members are asking the questions to them, and I hope that will even happen this afternoon or tomorrow, that they have those consultation with them, that there's quite clarity. Secondly, Chairperson, I also want to say that I presume that we will get a copy of the directive that is going out, because the people are also asking us what the procedure is. Just to give you an indication, Commissioner, it's Thursday to, on Tuesday in my hometown in Stilfontein, when somebody went there, they said the DFO won't be available for the next 6 weeks. And nobody else wants to get involved with the issue, because it's only the DFO that the station says that can handle the matter. So there are really a lot of practical problems. And I must say that the public or the firearm owners, there's quite a lot of confusion. And I would also ask the police to communicate it clear to the public what the process is going to be. I personally think that, and you've mentioned, Honourable Chair, that all the other problems with storage and everything, like we know that's a big concern. And can I also say that is also quite a big concern for firearm owners. I mean, I get people to say, well, how do I know that if I'm going to hand in my firearm, that it's not going to use in a crime? Unfortunately, whether we want to know it or not, that is the perception of the public. And I personally think the way to handle this situation, and I know the amnesty process is something different from this, although I do believe that is a solution also for the people to come forward. They will have more confidence, because we know, Chairperson, and we have those discussions, criminals don't hand in their firearms. In fact, they welcome if there's things like amnesty, because then maybe they can get more firearms. But for the public, that if we have the amnesty period, I am sure there will be more confidence from the public or the firearm owners. And of course, we know that the moment you have amnesty, there is a certain process where people can go through to try to get the firearms back again. So I would ask the Commissioner so that we can speed up that specific process of, if he can give us an indication, and I know, or even from your side, Chairperson, you can also give an indication as far as the amnesty process is concerned. I see the Chairperson is shaking his head. Commissioner, what he wants to say is waiting for the police, so let's hear from the police.
Thank you, Honourable Mula, and then Honourable Karabana. And I think Honourable Bele, also the first Honourable Bele.
Thank you, Chairperson. General, what happens to the stations that don't have DFOs, who's going to do the work? Because I remember last time when we had an oversight in the Free State, there were stations that were having no DFOs, and there was a lot of stations. I don't know if we did deploy those DFOs in the stations. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Honourable Mula, Honourable Bailey, and Honourable Karabana.
Thanks, Chairperson. I also like to welcome the assurances and the demeanor of a positive spirit from the SAPS top brass on this issue. I think it will calm a lot of anxiety out there, and tomorrow's announcement will then provide the clarity. I think the angle I just wanted to bring in, given that we're talking about the path forward, is to remind everyone present that you have to remember that all the stakeholders in the firearm ownership sector, from your hunters to the shooting clubs to the arms and ammunition dealers, all have a vested interest in having a competent and efficient system in this environment, and they all have a vested interest in upholding the reputation of firearms owners, given the general stigma that exists out there around firearms and firearm ownership, especially as it links to gun violence, both in the criminal sort of gang context as well as in the domestic violence context, instrumentalized and distorted some of that has been. So they want to help. They want to make sure that the system works. And so to take a lead from the commissioner's exhortation that things move forward in a positive spirit, I would like to ask and encourage that there be a partnership approach with the stakeholders. If, for example, as part of the short-term interim period even going forward, to consider, for example, the fact that the arms dealers, the shooting clubs, many of them will probably tend to have more secure storage facilities on average compared to many police stations, because the last thing they want is news to start going out and for things to happen where the storage facilities of a shooting club is raided and firearms stolen, as happens more regularly with police stations and with SANDF bases. So they want to cover themselves as much as possible. So you can leverage that capacity, you can leverage that infrastructure and that network. And I think if the consultation and the collaboration happens as is indicated will be the case, please use the full spectrum of stakeholders and people who want to make the system work, and don't feel that you have to do it all by yourself, given that we know there's constrained capacity. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to say we've had two references from two different provinces. I will speak about KZN, where I was sent from various stations to eventually found one with a DFO who was away and had to go back, and then found I had to make an appointment. People now making appointments there, maybe can go in for their applications in 3 months, 4 months, is the backlog. That's just to apply for a license, to apply for a renewal. So please, consider very carefully what we're saying here. I don't want to see, I have been far too often to the Central Firearm Registry. I'm sure you have too. I'm sure if you had hair, you'd pull it out. I couldn't believe how SAPS members have to work. That they even have to enter that building is disgusting. It is chaos. We know that. We can't see the SAPS have this tidal wave of what were, until a week ago, legal firearms land there for storage, and then the applications go through, and then they go to collect them, and then some are missing, and some are gone, and there's a problem, and there are issues. 400,000 times of that. So I'm hoping your solution is a very elegant one, and that, yeah, please make sure, if you, I agree with Honourable Kroonewald, we have got to get your missive, release whatever it's going to be tomorrow or delayed this afternoon, explaining to people who will initially be very relieved that they're not going to promptly be, you're not going rushing out to arrest 400,000 people, but they need to know what the process is. And I go back to Section 21 over and over, raised in the court case, just seems the best solution all round. Thank you.
Any other member?
Thank you. My, I just want to ask, and I just want to make sure whether we share the same view. I mean, we have the Concord case now, we have the amnesty as a separate issue, but another separate issue is the old, they call it the green license. That was a court case in 2009. And I just want to make sure whether the commissioner agree with me that as far as that is concerned, that court case is still as it is. I see the general is shaking his hand. And so, yeah, you're confirming it. But because saying that that is still valid, the old green license is still valid, so that the people, of course, of the procedures is they did apply in the new act. Of course, we know that situation, but I just want to get confirmation because I also get quite a lot of questions on that specific issue. So the whole idea, Chairperson, is just to get clarity so that the people know what is going on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. We'll give the International Commission the same opportunity to respond.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think what we would like to promise the committee is that we are on stabilization, so the only people that were top priority that we're going to arrest are the highest criminals and not ordinary loyal citizens. And Chair, what the observation that has been made by the Chair with regard to the audit teams, the storage, I also included security of those particular stations. Maybe what I would then need to relate to the comment is that we're going to treat this matter as a special project. And we're going to confine it to a scope. And what would be included in the scope the feasible part that will enable us to deal with and dispose of the subject effectively. So areas that are not part of the state of readiness, we're going to treat them as such and set them aside. Because the moment we take charge of those firearms, we agree they must be safe and they must not be involved in any crime. None of them must get lost. So over and above the audit teams, which will be part of the special project plan, and the looking at the safe storages under the control of SAPS and the security of those police stations which will be taking charge of these firearms, that will be part of the special project. So I confirm your observation, Chair. Then the cluster commanders, they will be given a clear directive within the project deliverable description. The monitoring, the enforcement, and the performance management system will also be clearly tied up to their performance agreement for the duration of the project, so that everyone is clear what is the expectation and from them. The consideration of the Section 21, it has been thrown into the current legal process, which will be captured as part and parcel of the directive which will be issued. It's not the only input. Maybe I might just need to disclose as well that our engagement with regard to this matter started yesterday already. I think after the committee meeting, I had to meet with some of the firearm stakeholders together with General Masema. That's where we said, while there's a legal analysis based on the judgment and as well as the guidance as to how the execution will go about. We are not throwing away inputs. Those inputs that will support the effective execution of this particular project, we're going to incorporate them. But we are not going to try to change the judgment because we don't have the competence to do that. And we're also not going to apply the discretion. So maybe it's just also important as well to say that engagement has already started. The firearms stakeholders are already coming out. We're not chasing them away. then the question of the DFOs, it's going to be frontline in the project, because all the stations that will be taking charge of these firearms, they will need to have competent DFOs. But over and above the DFOs at the stations, I think General Masemula will also have to look out for other DFO capacity that might no longer be in the DFO environment, including people who might have been transferred or promoted out of the environment, because they will just need to beef up the project capacity so that we make sure that when the firearm owners come out, they receive the necessary attention. So I think we're going to beef up the project plan to maximum. That will include the stations that do not have DFOs, because the committee is also aware that we are also driving together with the stabilization, the migration of resources. So we will also be prioritizing the stations that do not have DFO. The directive is transparent. I think we can make it available. It doesn't have any operational implications. We will also appreciate the support from members of the committee, because I'm sure the purpose of the directive is also to support or assist us to enhance the process. Then I think the question of DFO staying away, one is the question of absence management, which is our daily responsibility, but it's also a disciplinary issue. So we will enforce it through discipline, and we will identify those particular stations, because before someone can be given leave, we will need to make sure that the function continues while this person is away, and it's a critical function. We will rather have, if we do not have a capacity at that station, we'd rather have to move any other capacity from either a nearby station or where there is. Let me say that for the duration of the project term, because we will not be able to afford a situation where there will be no DFO waiting for the station. So we will also be addressing it through the project. I think the last one is on the amnesty. The green license, I would like to confirm the general's head. So, and I will not explain it further. Then, the amnesty. The minister has pronounced on the amnesty before the judgment, which then means the amnesty proposal that the minister is looking at the present moment, it excludes the judgment. If there would be any consideration for amnesty which impact on the judgment, it could as well mean that then the minister will have to make a decision on an addendum that can then talk to it. But at the present moment, it's not yet. And after the analysis, we're still going to brief the minister fully. And also, in terms of the directives, then we will also hear what is the direction of the minister. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, I want to close now with this subject. We must go to the business of the day, the urgent matter.
Okay, so what I'm reading out of this is there's no option. Those 400,000 people must go and hand their firearm to a station and get a piece of paper saying their firearm is there, and then apply for a license and then go back and collect the firearm. Could you give me an indication of the time span it would take for a person who's handing in a firearm and applying? Obviously they have to do their competency certificate, but let us say your DFO is booked up for 2 months and they can get an appointment and they get that. How long these days is a license going to take? I mean, it used to be 40 years. It used to take, by the time you got your little card, you had to apply for the next one. So what can we tell people will be the duration? Thank you.
Right, thank you. That's the last member on this subject. We want to move on. General Schmoller, you're welcome. Thank you, Mr.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and members. I think this matter, we will do everything and all what is legal. We will not go beyond anything that is not within the law. And I think the committee, the Honorable Committee and Honorable Members, as we are well and affair with the law, we won't go beyond what the law says we should do. And also, I think also you don't be correct, Honorable Chair, that we take concessions that might be in contravention of the law. So I think that we also have to, I think the committee is here to guide us. So we can't be taking concessions that are in contravention with the law. It will be a problem as we go out there, and it will be a perception to the public that no, maybe the police now will do 1, 2, 3. Then we might be then be seen to say, well, there is a constitutional court judgment, and again, the committee will come and say, police, you are now doing, you are going the other way around of the constitutional court judgment. Can I do the kennel again? Just to touch section 21 and so on. Thanks, sir.
Like you know, I must just think that the committee supports the constitutional court ruling. I mean, we must abide by that. Thank you.
Yeah, in relation to my question. I simply asked how long it would take for a person to get a license if they handed it in today. I don't know what the delay times are today. I wasn't asking for any special concession at all. I mean, I wouldn't do that. And I don't know why it's being implied.
Right, Colonel, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. As the General was saying, the Concord ruling is that lapsed, you don't have a valid license, you're illegal possession. And if you read through the court judgment, it only entertained the constitutionality of the two different sections. And it did not extend to comment on any other issues because they couldn't deal with it. And this is why we have to go look to see, as the General was saying, not to criminalize us, but we have to adhere to the constitutional court decision. And you cannot implement anything or do anything that is contrary to legislation. So being in illegal possession, a person has to go look, and this is why we were sitting till late night to see how do we get around this as being the law enforcement agency to make this legal to be within the parameters of that. And it's very difficult. So this is the things that we're looking at. We're sitting on the constitutional court ruling, which is very clear. So we have to deal with it, as the General was saying.
Yeah, Honorable Chair, maybe to try and come closer to the expectations of the committee. The project plan will take off now, and I'm going to give it two even review time frames, which will be 3 months, then again 6 months. So in this year, operationally, there's going to be 2 quarterly reviews where they will be giving progress to me. I wanted to propose to the committee that we then update the committee on quarterly basis about the progress or at any other period as the committee will deem fit. But then we will deal with how we speed up the processes within the project, and as they come and present to me, I will then be able to give instructions within the project based on time frames. But for now, we can update the committee quarter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner. I think it's critical that there must be proper communication from the police side in terms also of the SOP that's going to be issued. Communication with the public is critical, and we'll late August then invite again the management specifically on that issue. Thank you very much.
Chair, I didn't get an answer. I asked a simple question. If a person goes in today, hands in the firearm, and applies for a license, how long would it take? Right now, what are the systems like? Will it take a month, 2 months, 6 months? That's all I asked for.
Okay. let's get that response. Thank you, General Masmora.
Thanks. The standard time frame, we know that you renew, you have to apply before 90 days and so on. But currently, the question by the honourable member to say if you now take a firearm that the license has lapsed, which there is this court judgment now, you take it to a police station, you hand it over as an illegal firearm. There is no, currently, there is no rule that says apply for a license for that firearm. I think that's what the Kennel also explained. That's the position. Thanks.
Right, thank you very much. Members, we will now go to item 2, briefing to the Portfolio Committee on Police on the contract management and procurement processes within the SAPS. General Sitole.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. I think our first presentation is going to be in terms of the procurement process, and that presentation will be led by Lieutenant General Mokwena. Thank you.
Thank you, General Mokwena. You're welcome.
Section 1, we're going to look at the organigram. Look at the organigram, procurement and contract management, which consists of regulatory framework associated with the procurement process, procurement delegations, procurement transparency in the SAPS, detailed and schematic breakdown of the procurement process, practical application of the procurement process, managing of contracts, ICT procurement, building projects, risk and risk mitigation, communication with provincial and divisional procurement practitioners, irregular expenditure, and the WPGM office. Section 2 will look at the definitions, categories of contracts, regulatory framework, purpose, situational analysis, key focus areas, risk management, implementation, monitoring and reporting, National Commissioner's Turnaround Strategy. Now, Section 1, that is now the procurement process. Now, we have a component that handles the procurement in the police nationally.
Just a moment, General. I just want to know the members of the public that while the portfolio committee is on, as well as the speakers at the podium, please respect that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Now, nationally, we will have a component that handles all procurement in the department, which is led by a component head at the level of Major General, and we have under him a procurement management, which is movable government property and services. Then you will have procurement management facilities. Then you will have a procurement management that is contracts. That is the management of contracts, of all the contracts, whether it be departmental contracts or transversal contracts. Now, on the following slide, you will see that page 2, you have two legs that handles contracts. Basically, facility contracts and contracts that deals with movable government property. Next slide, page 3. All procurement actions in the South African Police Service are governed by legislation and prescript, which includes, amongst others, the following. The South African Police Service Act, Act Number 68 of 1995, Section 205 and Section 217 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, Act Number 108 of 1996, the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, Act Number 5 of 2000, and Regulations issued from time to time. 2017-041 is the latest one. A broad-based black economic empowerment at number 53 of 2003, the PFMA, of which all of us were conversant with, the State Information Technology Agency, that is the CITA Act, at number 88 of 1998. National Treasury Instruction Notes and Circulars, which are issued from time to time. The lastly, we have the South African Police Service User Manual Directive in respect of acquisition. Basically, this is where our AG and our internal audit are auditing the division supply chain management on. Page 4, we're looking at the Construction Industrial Development Board, that is the CIDB. This is a policy that governs the construction industry or the built environment, Joint Building Contracts Committee, that is the JBCC, Prevention and Combating of Crime Act, Public Administration Management Act, Prevention of Organized Crime Act, Companies Act, Safety, Health, Environment and Quality. National procurement. All procurement approvals above the 300,000 are finalized at National Supply Chain Management. All requirements for bids above 300,000 are finalized and approved at national level by the bid adjudication committee.
So there is just a clarification. So there is at that stage of the second year no national treasury involved.
Maybe if I can just, if you allow me, Chair, to just go a bit deeper. All provinces and divisions are given a threshold value up to 300,000 in terms of inviting costs. Anything above that, but less than 500,000, the procurement authority must be obtained at supply chain management. Admission, meaning their delegation is limited to up to 299 in terms of location. The moment it reaches 300,000, the procurement authority must be obtained from national supply chain. But all the requirements which are above 500,000 must follow the bidding process, must be advertised. But you will find in some instances where we participate in transversal contract, which is negotiated, advertised, adjudicated, and awarded by National Treasury, which we are participants thereof. That is managed by Treasury.
So I mean that means the simple CITAL contracts will for that purpose then they will be treasury involved.
Yes, definitely. All, may I just say this, Chair, all the ICT and IT-related requirements are handled through CITA. From SAPS, we hand them over to CITA, and there will be a collaboration between CITA and National Treasury.
Right. So the final go-in will be, say, in practice, by National Treasury.
Yes, I'm a member, Chair.
The final go-in will
be the National Treasury.
In terms of the current system.
In terms of the current system, if it's a transversal contract, not a contract. The final say rests with the National Department of Treasury. Provincial and divisional and procurement. Provincial and divisional procurement officers have been delegated to finalize all procurement actions up to the threshold of 300,000. Quotation in excess of this threshold value must be forwarded to National Supply Chain Management, like I indicated.
So, example of that, because we want to become practical, so for instance, the police station tool, that quotation that was sourced by the Provincial Commission in the Eastern Cape, that will fall under that 300,000. concept service to local.
Yeah, it will be handled locally, finalized locally. Compliance to national treasury prescripts. The South African Police Service submits procurement plan approved by the National Commissioner for Publication. Thereafter, deviations, expansions, and other feedbacks are sent quarterly, which is also measured through the MPET by the Department of Performance Management and Evaluation. Deviations for quotation are on the threshold value of 1 million are reported to national treasury. Technological reforms, that is tender portal, central database, it's one of them. The South African Police Service also complies with the legal reforms such as the PPFA, that is the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, Act number 5 of 2000, Supply Chain Management Commercial Contract, Transversal Contract, that is as prescribed by law. This slide deals with the small day activities. If I may skip and go to the next one, because these are activities.
Can we maybe go to the deviations?
Okay.
I just want to maybe clarify. Say, for instance, because we have, for instance, the DNA boards, that's earlier this week, and the whole issue of the DNA kits is sorted.
Yes.
Now, for instance, if you can't use one or two of the suppliers due to disqualification or problems, investigations, aging queries, scope of queries, what is your ability to source then other service providers in terms of the deviation to ensure that the SAPS members and the stations get and have the necessary materials to do? I just wondering if you can just explain that first.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for giving me the opportunity to explain exactly what deviations implies and also what agency in terms of treasury regulations in place. In a situation where we are, there is a shortage of DNA countrywide because of the investigation that is being undertaken with regard to the manipulation previously of the system. Treasury grant funds an authority to utilize the agency deviation, which it can be of any amount because of the currency. Now, as supply chain practitioners, we did follow the process, but in terms of the evaluation, like we're not scientists, it still have to be evaluated by the end user who are now scientists. They will be in a position to know exactly what DNA will be suitable for hair, for eyes, and so on, human tissues. Now, that we follow, only to find out the other company that was recommended is also under investigation. Then we get locked. But what the National Commissioner has done has instructed to advertise in all the newspapers. You were not chairperson and honorable members. We were only advertising in the government tender. What we are now doing, we are going to advertise in all national newspapers, government tender bulletin, and as far as possible, we are trying to find out from supply chain benefits any company that deals with DNA to come and participate, so as to, you know, to go into details into this matter. The reality is, Honorable Chair, when this issue of manipulation started, my observation is that the machines that were imported today are such that the current DNA that we were sourcing from these companies that are under investment, they are the only ones that are competent Now, in a long turnaround strategy, Chair, we need to sell those machines, because for as long as we're having those machines, Chair, we will not be able to honor the service that we owe to the public. But for current now, we are in a process of sourcing, as you know, exploring all the markets to say, come and participate, come and advise us, tell us how can we overcome the current situation. And that process is underway. Hopefully, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member, that should be sorted out by next week, Friday. But we do have something in store currently, but it's not enough. That is the reality of the situation. But in that case, through quotation, Honorable Chair, we can buy without following a bidding process, because the situation is urgent and Treasury is not being asked that information.
So it's only the end user evaluation that's really holding up the
process? Yes. That is where the challenge is.
Any members on this specific one? Or we can maybe lay down the questions here. But you can continue to thank you, General, for that explanation. I think that's quite valuable.
I'll go to slide number 9. The requirement of DNA kit will be received together with the specification compiled by the end user, that is the Division Forensic Services, and the confirmation of funds by the South African Police Service Demand Management. And that is attached. The section Demand Management, together with the nominated representative from the end user forensic science laboratories, will conduct a specification meeting to ensure the correctness of the specification. A certificate of unbiasedness and confidentiality is signed by all members. The requirement, together with the specification and confirmation of funds, will be forwarded to procurement for the activation of the procurement process. Permission will be obtained from the Division SEM to proceed with the procurement process. That relates to the current one. Slide number 10. A pre-advertised meeting is conducted. Chair, I don't know, must I go also to another, you know, activity? Yeah, let me go to the higher level. I think now we will come to contract management, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. And I will request our legal services now to take over from contract management, page number 12.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. Maybe just before legal services, that is to be important for us to bring to the attention of the committee that this is the first contract management strategy in the organization. We did not have one, and that is because one of the reasons why we decided to have it was because of the analysis of the current situation in the organization, which we are also trying to turn around. But also, there has been some missing link in the integrated approach. I think the Chair would also understand that there are certain contracts that we entered into at the expense of national security and other aspects. Hence, as we analyzed them, we saw the need for a contract management strategy so that it enhance and align to our procurement. But also finally, we wanted to align contract management to the improvement of policing, so that policing improve in the manner in which we apply contracts, then clean administration or procurement administration. Hence, as we present the strategy, we expect that there could be a lot of input or questions. But we're already on a preliminary, that is execution, which there will also be able to talk to it. What I've personally personally added to the strategy which will not necessarily reflect in the current document is the statement of intent, which talks to the turnaround vision and moving forward, and the value statement, because we definitely have to share some values, and the two of those that I can quote up front is service integrity. We need to reclaim the reputation of the organization. That is in the manner in which we're looking at contract management. But we also want our contract management practices to share the interest of the national security. So I think those are build-ups as we're moving forward. So with your permission, then we can allow legal services to take us through. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. Before we proceed to what a contract management strategy is, we need to define a contract. A contract is an agreement entered into with the intention of creating legal obligation. And what is a contract management strategy? These are activities necessary to manage a contract from the moment a contract is signed up until termination. The SAP deals with the following categories of contracts: departmental procurement contracts of goods, works and services, transversal contracts as the previous presenter alluded to in his slide 6, fully, Department of Public Works procurement model contracts. In the former presentation it was fully alluded in slide 14, ICT IT procurement contracts in terms of the CITA Act, as we just discussed in slide 13 of the previous presentation. The regulatory framework also has been discussed fully in the procurement presentation, but even though we have dealt with above, what is of most importance to contracts is Section 195 of the Constitution, which deals with values and the country's public administration. Section 205 of the Constitution is also very crucial to contracts because it determines the main function for the service. Section 217 of the Constitution also is crucial to contracts because it lays down requirements of public procurement in public environments, which must be effected in a fair, equitable, transparent, and competitive and cost-effective manner. In respect of Section 38, which has been captured in error there, it's supposed not to be of the Treasury Regulations, but of the Public Performance Management Act. Public Finance Management Act, thank you. The accounting officer of a department must ensure that the department maintains effective, efficient, and transparent systems of financial and risk management and systems of internal audit, appropriate procurement and provisioning system which is fair and equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective, as well as a system of properly evaluating all major capital projects. The purpose of the contract management is to it aims to enhance the governance related to the management of contracts, to create a safe and secure crime-free environment, as the National Commissioner alluded to, that is conducive for social economic stability in support of a better life for all, including the insurance of accountability for public funding through a clean and sound administration. The impact of the strategy will be to maximize a deliverance of a higher level of service to communities, which is also in terms of the National Commissioner's turnaround strategy to realize and enhance effective policy. The situation as it is that In SAPS, the contracts are managed by relevant business units within the organization, which are responsible for specific contracts. However, these contracts are not being properly managed effectively due to the following reasons. There is inefficient accountability at executive level. There is lack of consequence management. Leadership has ensured sufficient legislation, prescripts, and processes. However, the lack of a mechanism to deal with contracts has been a gap for a number of years. The current computerized contract management strategy is insufficient and inefficient to deal with technological and information changes. It is also a challenge to contract management, the issue of people movement, people that are qualified when they move to be employed in private sectors. This creates a skills gap, and these people that deal with contracts are stationed in different business units. So the workflow is carried out in different business units. And another challenge is that there is a dependency in other organizations, as we have alluded that in the CETA and the Department of Public Works. When there's changes in cost, there comes in a challenge in the management of the contract in the costs that are unavoidable but not budgeted for, e.g. cost like VAT increases. However, in other contracts, most of the contracts that are drafted have allowances in terms of the law of contract to allow for reasonable fitting in of changes that are necessary. There is a lack of evaluation of the impact of the service or the product that the organization purchased as against the money that we have spent. The key performance areas that the contract management strategy is going to deal with is the establishment of a contract management inventory within the organization. And this will be done by developing a centralized contract management system, which will provide for early warning systems, alert management in respect of budgetary implications as against the expenditure of the organization, trend analysis spending, advancing practice, and how the organization is advancing the practice of economic upliftment in each contract. The key performance area that was identified is the identification and classification of contracts in terms of their risk and assessing the level of risk, the impact of the risk, the categories of the contracts that have been alluded above. And this will also include the type of the contract, the amount, and the responsibilities that will arise out of the contract. The uniform management of contracts has been developed through a national instruction which the National Commissioner has already approved in principle. This national instruction terms of reference have also been drafted, which he has also approved in principle. And this will deal with issues of strict compliance with demand management processes to align the contract to strategic objectives of the organization, as well as alignment of enforcement of delegations of our authorities. The following key performance area will be the improvement of a contract management capacity and capability, which is going to be done through a work study investigation. In support of promoting of a clean and sound administration towards effective policing, the National Commissioner has already established a contract management committee, which he has already approved it, and it is chaired by a Deputy National Commissioner, Asset and Legal Management. And the terms of reference of this committee has also been drafted and finalized, and the National Commissioner has approved them in principle. Maybe to mention that this committee will be integrated in its functions. It will report to the senior executive forums of the organization. The audit committee and the risk committee will also form part of this committee. The following key performance area is that we will develop a separate communication strategy within the SAP, but we want to make it visible here that the communication will be key, and this will include the creation and the education and to raise awareness, share best practices, have a web-enabled system, and conduct learning networks throughout the organization. In terms of the risk management of the contract of the strategy, the SAP's risk management approach requires that risk management be applied in respect of all business processes by the relevant line manager. And this is required through the risk management strategy. This also applies to all forms of contract management. Contract-related risk will be managed by the relevant contract owners. There will be risk assessed individually. A formalized risk management methodology will be followed, and a risk treatment plan will be utilized to monitor and identify the risks. And these risks will be subject to an audit, which will provide reasonable assurance of the effectiveness of the treatment of the risks. And we will conduct related risk that will be included in the risk register of the organization.
But this slide, I presume, is all things that are going to be implemented. It's not currently in place. It's all
yes.
Future music.
Yes, this is the
strategy, yeah. It's the current situation.
Thank you, Chair. That's correct. However, we have established a governance protocol related specifically to the management of risk at the moment. And this will be utilized in order to effect that the SAP's risk management committee will assess the application of these processes to ensure that the key areas of the risk are appropriately managed. And the risk management committee will report to the SAP's audit committee, which exercises an oversight over all governance processes in the organization. The risk management committee reports to the Board of Commissioners as per King IV report on corporate governance. Chair, a detailed implementation plan has already been developed and the National Commissioner has approved it. That will be utilized in a phased-in approach. The implementation plan will also provide that if there are projects or programs that needs to be adopted in order to effect deliverables, such as the establishment of a centralized database. This will end the capacitating of practitioners, procurement and legal. This will be done and as a project, and the committee, the project steering committee, will manage this project as and when they are identified. As aligned earlier in key performance area 6, the national commissioner has designated the deputy national as a commissioner asset and legal to manage for governance of the contract management framework, to manage this contract. And the Board of Commissioners is the governing body of the SAT. So this committee will form a subcommittee of the Board of Commissioners. And the committee, as referred in key performance area, will ensure accountability and oversight. And as part of the members in this committee, I need to mention that the chief risk officer, the chief audit committee executive, audit executive, the additional commissioners from specific business units will be invited to attend on an ad hoc basis when the need arises by the national commissioner or the deputy national commissioner in charge of the contract. And the draft terms of reference, as I said, have already been approved by the national commission. In respect of monitoring and reporting, the contract management strategy will be monitored continuously with the aim of timely identifying risks and deviations and rectifying what those deviations are in terms of the impact of the deviation. The contract management committee will monitor the implementation through quarterly reports, which will be linked to the annual performance plan. And this can be provided to the Board of Commissioners, the Executive Management Forum, the Senior Executive Forum, and the Deputy National Review, the Deputy National Commissioner's review sessions that will be done in quarterly review sessions. In terms of monitoring tools, in respect of the contract management strategy, the Deputy National Commissioner Asset and Legal will evaluate the success of the contract management strategy, and the strategy will be reviewed annually, and the Deputy National Commissioner will provide feedback to all senior managers. The evaluation of the impact of the strategy will be determined through review sessions, analysis of complaints against the police, as well as the central database trend analysis. The contract management strategy is related and linked to the sub-strategic plan and all plans in the organization, such as the National Crime Combating Strategy, the Resource Management Strategy, the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Strategy, the Procurement Plan, the Capital Works Plan, the ISICT Strategy, the Risk Management Strategy, and the Audit Plan. In support of the vision of the turnaround strategy, the contract management strategy is aligned to the medium-term expenditure framework and will be reviewed every 3 years or at the direction of the National Commission. That is the end of the strategy.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. Just to indicate, the implementation plan, it's a quick win action plan responding to the current situation. So it's under implementation. just also to point out there's gaps that we needed to close between the Deputy National Commissioners and the Divisional Commissioners. The users are the Divisional Commissioners, but there's been an accountability gap between the Divisional Commissioner and the Deputy National Commissioners. So we have also aligned performance management to close that particular gap so that the National Commissioners are held accountable to me and the Divisional Commissioners, they account to them. So just bringing them into the chain. The other aspect that we also looked at is that all contracts must respond to the modus operandi so that they can improve policy. And I would also be expecting the contract management strategy to produce a performance report, a contract performance report, so that we check as to which of the contracts are performing, which are those that are not performing, so that we can either discard them or dispose of them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner. Members, we will now go to questions. Maybe the first few from my side. The National Commissioner indicated yesterday's engagement as well, the issue of the lifestyle audits. If we can just get a confirmation of the BID committee members, what is the process there? Is that process underway? When can we expect a date in terms of completion? And then the whole issue, the lead time. If you detect problems in the procurement and contract environment, what is the responsibilities of your division commissioners and DNCs to deal with it? And I'm going to take now an example. And it's a letter, General, that was written to you by Judge Mukhoro, dated 28 May. And I just want to quote from a letter on page 2. And it relates to the Division Forensic Science Services. And I quote, on further investigation, it has transpired that the biology section of the Forensic Science Laboratory has been hamstrung by undue delays in the awarding and for renewal of maintenance contracts and the procurement of generic DNA consumables, including insufficient resources provided to the biology section, notably forensic DNA analysts and administration staff to perform the exhibit registrations and supporting functions to maintain the significant increase in samples submitted to the forensic science laboratory. Maintenance contracts and DNA consumable contracts not timely facilitated and renewed by division supply chain management. Increased downtime of the DNA system and inadequate support by the State Information Agency. The net effect of these delays has been the partial collapse of the DNA system, preventing the analysis of DNA samples, providing courts with the forensic DNA reports and the verification of forensic DNA investigation leads. Moreover, the declining numbers of fecal sample kits at station level and at several stations, the depletion of fecal sample kits means that DNA samples are not being taken from persons arrested and charged for Schedule 9 offences. Now, this matter was already raised in December of last year. Now, I've listened to your strategy for future usage, but it's quite clear there is really a problem. And we want to know from the National Commissioner, what is going to be the consequent management? Because if there is not kits at the stations, it affects the ability for the criminal justice system, and it's very serious. So from the committee side, we want assurances today. The third issue we also want to raise is what is the current position of the CFO of the SAPS? If the National Commissioner can just give us an indication. Is he in office? Is there any other situation? If he's not in office, who is the acting CFO of the SAPS currently? Thank you. Honorable Malabat.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Do all members of the BID committee have security clearance? And also,
how is this BID committee constituted? My second question, what measures has the department put in place to facilitate the reporting of corruption in procurement and other aspects of the supply chain management? My third one, how many cases of corruption in the procurement process did the department investigate and successfully prosecute in the year under review? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bacha, on my mood.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. Our own tenders published on the departmental website as per Treasury regulations. My second question, does the subs have an appeal process where unsuccessful bidders feeling unfairly treated can request a review of the awarding of bids? My third question is, subs, will you please explain the manner in which consequence management in terms of irregular expenditure is done by the BAC? My last question, does SARS have a SCM system in place that complies with the PPPFA and the SCM framework issued by the National Treasury? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Omar Mula. Omar Ma.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a comment first. I think this is one of the best things that could happen. I'm not sure whether other departments have got something of this nature. If one has not in a government department before, you will clearly see that this is a beautiful strategy. And this reminds me in key performance area number one, where unless management in relation to budget vice versa contract expenditure. In municipalities, a person gets a contract for 4 years. And then, meaning that the budget within the department will be for that 4 years. And the person, just the contractor, just decides to finish the contract within 2 years. And if you check, it means you haven't budgeted for 2 years, you've got to use money that you never budgeted for. That takes you off the rails. Well, that was just a comment. If every department could have a strategy like this, that would be the best. Just one question or just a clarification. Key performance area number two. Identification and classification of contracts. Just to understand how classify this contract. What does that mean? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Omar Mark. Honorable Mabija. Welcome, Honorable Ramatakane. I'll give you some time just to acclimatize. We will be busy with item 3 on the program. You're welcome. Honorable Mbele.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I think when dealing with subject matter of this nature, it's very easy to get lost in the technicalities and the jargon. But I think that the National Commissioner made a key point in his sort of closing remarks after the formal presentation to say that the key thing is that supply chain management and procurement and contract processes have to be aligned to and responsive to the operational needs of the service. Because the great difficulty I've had for the last 4 years in this committee, and it's not the first time I want to say this, because I normally say it at the time of the annual report, is that at the high level of the departments, everything looks dandy. You know, SAPS consistently does well in terms of maintaining low levels of irregular expenditure. The AG generally gives them a clean bill of health. In fact, the first time they had issues with the last financial year, it was because there was a confusion with CETA around laptops and, you know, ICT equipment, and therefore things were miscategorized and the paperwork just went awry. But generally, things look good on paper and at the high level. But then you go to the ground level, and sometimes prolific oversight program takes me to a lot of police stations around the country, and you see a completely different picture. Under-resourcing, under-equipping, and almost a sense that operational officers on the ground, not everywhere, but in many places, and police stations have been left completely in the lurch. They've just been left out in the barren wastelands to fend for themselves. I get messages. There was one I was just reviewing now from a detective in a police station at the Cape Flats who've been asking and asking for vehicles. And in particular, they want unmarked vehicles because detectives need to be able to get around without drawing attention. And they just say, there's get dololo. Station commander in Durban as well, in a past visit, tells me the refrain seems to be, and you know, we hear it being said that, oh, the end users send their specs and it's all taken up. But what I hear from the ground is that when station commanders and other closer to the ground end users send their needs, the reply generally, and it is from provincial level, so I know there's levels to this thing, they get told there's no budget. But how can there be a determination of what the budget will be and therefore whether or not there isn't available to respond to on-the-ground needs if you haven't heard from the people on the ground yet? So, you know, I see the flow charts, I see everything. That's the theory, Chair. That's not what's happening on the ground in many places. And so I think my very simple question, and it's more of a... not so much a, I thought it was partly technical, is can somebody explain to me what happens and how does it happen that an entire system that is so regulated and has so much detail laid out as to how things should happen, how can it be that the entire system seems to be unresponsive to some very basic needs at station level? And I fully appreciate that, you know, national senior management cannot have their finger on the pulse across the hundreds of precincts in the country. And so it's about that chain of accountability and responsibility through provincial cluster and other levels. But there's major breakdowns in the way that information and resources, well, the way that information flows up and the way that that resources then cascade down. And I just want to know, what's going on? How does that happen? Is the senior management team fully au fait with the crisis out there, the morale issues, the... you know, people are only hanging on because they want to get their pension. If they could, they would leave ASAP. And I've got to say, Chair, you know, our role as public reps is to bring to this platform and to this space what we hear from the public through oversights and through what they tell us. I'm sure the Chair gets the same amount of correspondence that we do, probably even more, because as the chairperson, the public perceives him to be able to do much more. So we know the complaints and the grievances and the problems that are brought to us from the public. I mean, Delft right now, but I'm not going to get into that. So, I would just like to know, this is the key lever in the SAPS around managing resources and budgets and allocating and resourcing them in a way that is responsive to the needs on the ground. What, in very simple terms, is going wrong? And I hear the remedies being proposed, subcommittees of the BOC, fantastic. That's not going to solve the issue. It's about the nitty-gritty, day-to-day, step-by-step, and ensuring that the value chain follows through. So, yeah, if I can just ask for some, maybe it needs different language, but I need to understand that the SAPS management has got a firm grip on what needs to happen, what's wrong right now, and how they're going to fix it. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we're going to take now a 10 to 15 minutes tea break, and then we'll come back for further questions and then the responses from the National Commission's team. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There's no charges. No? Unfortunately, these are very old buildings. The only person that has it. Yes. Are you sure what the body will have to complete your work? Yeah, that's the report that I have. Thank you.
honourable members, 2 minutes. 2 minutes, thank you. Thank you very much, honourable members. Thank you again, National Commission, your team. Honourable Molabasi, you've indicated you've got just one additional question.
Thank you very much. Mine is on this deputy class commander. Why do we have it? I'll tell you why. A lot of work is being done at police station level. It's the station commanders that are overworked and not the cluster. So why don't they at least have deputies instead of this cluster commanders? What are the deputies for? Because to be honest, this cluster commander,
Well, thank you very much. Any other member? Right, thank you very much, honourable members. We will then go directly to General Sitor and his team for the responses. Thank you, General.
Hey, thanks very much, Honourable Chair. I think, Honourable Chair, the lifestyle audit, we will respond together with the vetting. And I would start with the directives that I have given. The procurement environment has been identified as one of the priority areas for lifestyle audit as a result of the current situation. The same applies to forensic. I then gave an instruction that CI must come up with a project plan to address them. And I instructed both of the environments to start preparing, working on information that is relating to it and the specific targeted people within the environment. Those that they will start with, although all of them, they will have to be subjected to. I will therefore, with your permission, give first to General Mukwena to take the first response, and thereafter CI, which will be General Zumane and General Nkalaka. Thank you.
Thank you, National Commissioner.
Yes. Honourable Chair, honourable members. The members who does procurement and the members of the BAC, the Bid Adjudication Committee, has been fully vetted. That process has been completed. Now, beyond that, we have to now engage in a process of lifestyle audit. The request has been submitted to CI and the detective, and the implementation thereof, it has already started. But then I would like to hear from the detectives and the CI how, maybe when will they, fully implement it.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members. Indeed, Chair, I think there's a process that we have undertaken in terms of the lifestyle audit. I would say it's a three-pronged kind of an approach. If I have to explain to it, is that we, during our course of some kind of investigation or project-driven investigations, we will pick up some members that we're very interested in. And when we pick up these members that we're interested in, that are sometimes our subjects, we will definitely start this kind of a process as part of our investigation. And that is being done as well. Over and above that, National Commissioner will also give his areas of interest and concerns in terms of the lifestyle audits. Part of those areas would be his leadership, senior leadership as well. That CI will also do and prioritize those that needs to be prioritized. And also will look into divisions and components and business units. For example, the procurement environment as well. These are some of the areas that we have to do. But because of the limited human resource that I engage and the nature of this intensive kind of investigation and searching, it would always take time, but we normally prioritize this thing. I can just confirm that after the National Commissioner has given us an instruction, we are doing that as CI, and there's a project that we are busy with. And I can confirm that we have been given a chance to also to report to the senior management meetings on a weekly basis, and also in some of the executive kind of meetings that we normally have. So we are busy with that, though we are having very surmountable challenges that we are facing in terms of us expeditiously dealing with these matters. Thank you very much.
Honourable Chair, thank you. Honourable Members. Honourable Chair, I think the DNC crime detection was, his response was covering also what CI is doing, as the DNC responsible for CI. So there's nothing much to add, except to say that in terms of the vetting, we have completed the environment, but then the lifestyle audit is a continuous process. But for now, we don't have a consolidated report to say how far we are, but we are continuing as the DNC already explained. Thank you, Chairperson.
So we won't see members of the Met Committee with Argentinian T-shirts at Moscow. That's what you say.
You will see them in orange uniform, Chair. Chair, maybe the last part of this, the beefing up of the lifestyle and vetting capacity is part of the CI turnaround, and they will be giving a full report on a quarterly basis. So if we are called to appear after the quarter, we will provide updated steps in terms of this. And then, Chair, the responsibility for divisional commissioners and as well as the DNCs, more specifically talking to the letter from Judge Mahor. Maybe let me first explain the responsibility. I think both DIFCOMs as well as DNCs, they've got a Section 44 delegation in terms of fulfilling this responsibility. And firstly, that Section 44 is enforced through the performance management system. They are then held accountable, and they've got a performance obligation. If for any reason they do not fulfill their Section 44 delegation, performance management consequence is invoked. Then further to that, they are further guided by Section 34 of the Public Finance Management Act, as well as Section 81 if for any reason the organization suffers or suffer a loss as a result of their omission to carry their duties, then we invoked Section 81 and Section 81-2. We investigate a financial misconduct and where they may end up reimbursing the state on that particular loss. And should we undertake the performance consequence management, it will also automatically be followed by the disciplinary process in terms of the regulation. I think this is the status quo at the present moment. And they all sign this off into their performance contract. I have requested a meeting with Judge Mahoro, the board. The specific reason being that the matters that are outlined in their letter are also a subject of the current investigation. And as a result of them being the subject of this particular investigation, this could be a justifiable delay. But we are also going to discuss with them the alternatives which has been explained by General Mokwena to say we are moving the deviation way which is provided for, but we're trying to stay within the prescripts as we enhance the process.
Bill, the bottom line is, I mean, you're not going to have a situation where you run out of DNA kits or SAPs won't be able to actually function in dealing with suspects. I mean, that's our concern, that you're going to have no break in the evidence chain and we accept to deal with the crisis.
If we run out of DNA kits, Chair, these two will not be with us in the next appearance. And I told them. And I also told them before that I'm not going to appear before the committee unless I've got an assurance, and I give the assurance that the DNA kit will be ordered. Hence, maybe the deadline that has been given by General Mokwena. If we've got an investigation, policing cannot suffer as a result. We will be pushing it so that by the Friday that we refer to, then we've got the new DNA kids. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, General, just a follow-up on our
advice. The deadline being when?
It's next week, Friday. Yes. Or you can come in.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think, with all respect, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I don't think we really understand the process here. Supply chain ensures the process of acquisition. We are dependent on forensic science to give us a legitimate supplier. Unless, if the committee says to me, approve, regardless of this company, whether it's under investigation or not, that I will do. No, but General, I think we need to communicate this with supply chain practitioners, and it should be understood where we start and where we stop. And I'm saying with respect, it cannot be said, supply chain, you must deliver, when the end user is the one who's supposed to give me a legitimate supply or service provider, then I will approve. But if they continue giving me companies that are under investigation, there's nothing I can do. Because if supply chain practitioners approve illegitimate, who are subject again of investigation, we will be in orange overalls. Thank you, Chair.
But I think, General, there was an assurance that you will ensure that there is proper DNA kits, and we presume you will do the necessary due diligence to ensure that you don't contract companies that are blacklisted or corrupt. We've got that assurance from the National Commission. So, yes, Honourable Abadzi.
Okay, Chair. I think we are one organization. Yes, and I'm the head of that organization.
chair.
Yeah.
And the users who must give General Nkwena the spec and the suppliers, they account to me. So I've instructed all of them, including General Nkwena. And if I don't get the DNA kits, all of them will go. Yes. Chair, I will proceed to the current position of the CFO. I think Chair has been suspended. Unfortunately, there's a misconduct that he has committed in terms of the regulation, which warranted the suspension. So he's currently on suspension. I think he's been suspended together with General Shedi. There's one matter they share, but also is another matter. But the committee will also know we've got this notorious last day financial year payment of 52 million, which was done in 5 hours. So I think presently, Chair, I have assigned the CFO functions to Lieutenant General Vuma. And she's got a previous background of finance and supply chain. I didn't want to take it a lower level down due to the level of responsibility and accountability, especially on the existing investigations. We will expedite the process, which will either clear him or dispose of his process otherwise, and then we'll then see to it that the CFO function is intended. Thank you, Chair.
General Justin, on that one, we appreciate the assurances, but you're happy this in terms also of the function of the DNC, the other functions that it's got involved. I mean, the workload can just get on, because the CFO of SAPS is more than a full-time position. The audit is also being finalized, so can we just get that assurance?
Yeah, in actual fact, Chair, we will still present the structural review in terms of the new turnaround approach. In the standard principle of structures in the public sector, supply chain and finance, they both under the CFO function. At the present moment, we have a DNC who's overseeing both. Yet in actual fact, the two are both CFO functions. Now, in terms of the structure that we're reviewing, we want to adapt to the DPSA principle of presenting or maybe designing structures. So if you take it in the light of that particular fact, the function of the CFO was only addressing the one leg, which is finance, but was leaving the other leg. Which to a certain extent could be a little bit of an underutilization. But for the duration of the period, I would like to give the committee assurance that the CFO function will be fulfilled. Thank you. The BID committee members, we dealt with them, and I think General Mugwena has responded and confirmed that all of them has been vetted. The measures to report corruption, firstly, there's provision from within the organization for whistleblowing, and with the guarantee to protect members, anyone in the organization who sees corruption. But then further to that, there's a Section 34 responsibility, which is tied up to all commanders to make sure that corruption is reported. Then there's an internal toll-free number that is linked to corporate communication, and there's also the presidential hotline. There's provision that is for it to report corruption. So we are using these avenues, but we have just approved the anti-corruption strategy. And there's also the ethics committee, which will also be dealing with reports pertaining to corruption and linking them to the anti-corruption strategy. Then the cases of corruption, Chair, with your permission, General Vuma will relate to them.
Acting Chief, oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. It is safe to admit that maybe previously we didn't have measures that were able to protect corruption. But part of the contract management strategy seeks to assist us in terms of our implementation plan that we are currently refining, where we will definitely have measures that will assist us internally besides the all other roles that the National Commission has just mentioned that will assist us in reporting corruption. We want to have our own internal methodology of detecting corruption before it goes beyond the situation that we find ourselves in right now. Through the process that are currently going on, we have a number of cases that are currently going on. Some of the members that are directly affected, as and when you serve them with the investigation processes or intention to suspend, they immediately resign. Currently, I think we have, if I'm not mistaken, four members that have since resigned. I've just served three brigadiers with intentions to for investigation for now. I have one brigadier that has also served with an intention to suspend. I'm waiting, I think by Tuesday, she will respond with the representation as our process is prescribed, that the person needs to address you on the merits why he or she cannot be suspended. I also have one colonel that I also served whom I intended to suspend, who also decided to resign by the end of May. So far, these are the cases. But the investigations are carrying on. As and when they detect anything that relates to any member, the investigating officer submits to me recommendations on the steps that must initiate. Thank you,
Chief. Just on the follow-up, you mentioned three members in the sound. At what rank level are they?
It's a full colonel, a lieutenant colonel. I think there's a warrant officer and a captain, if I'm not mistaken.
Thank you so much. There's just a follow-up on that presentation. Honorable Bachi, Honorable Bula, you're welcome. Follow-ups.
Thank you, Chairperson. Do you have a way of following them up as they run away?
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to ask, what if they resign, what happens to the investigation? Does it fall down or what? And I've got this question that I want to ask General Tony, the issue of Brigadier Pink. Last time we were having a portfolio committee with the IP. I asked IP that about the peddler issue that 50,000 is a fraud and corruption as well. And they said we didn't get them the cases that you are coming back to them. I don't know when are you going to give them or it doesn't fall under the IP. But I know that the IP mandate is to follow the police which are doing the wrong thing. That's what I want to know, General. Thank you very much.
Honorable Ramita, can I also follow up?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just a small follow-up. I don't know to get in any of the detail of the suspension or not. Particularly, my question, General, is just the assurance of the process in which the DC takes place and you are able to put a full non-acting CFO. We've been here before on the Rwanda CFO issue. There's been a lot of problem with double parking. So just that assurance of the time in which you have to deal with it. Departmental issues, because the other issues are longer term issues. But I think clearing the department committee is at assurance time frame for that to happen.
Thank you, Honourable Ramaswamy. General Stoller, General Bumon.
Yeah, Honourable Chair, the follow-up on the resignations, maybe I will just give the strategic directional part. I've put together a forensic audit investigation team, which we refer to as the investigation value chain. There we've got IPs, we've got the forensic auditors, the internal audit, and we also have the investigations from Treasury. The majority of the people who have resigned here, they are subject to investigations in terms of the value chain. Yes, then some of them, they appear in the Treasury investigations through the contract. Some of them, they appear within IPED, but also within SARS. Detective is also seconded investigators there from anti-corruption. So they also are part of that particular subject. Now, within the corruption investigation, there's an escalation. The moment you resign, they resort to the asset forfeiture procedures and the, amongst others, the freezing of the pension and all other benefits until we dispose of the criminal in the investigation. So those are some of the routes that we're following depending on the seriousness that is of the matter. And those are the instructions that I have issued at that particular angle, but it's a collective approach. I think then General Zuma can follow up, but the issue of PECA, General Zumana will respond to it. And I have a suspicion within a week or two we'll be having new developments on that matter. But maybe we can give General Zumana first. With your permission, Chair.
Yes, Commissioner.
No. Chairperson, no, thank you very much, and honourable members and honourable Muller. The issue of PECA, I think I said in the past that there are some kind of discrepancies that we had to deal with in terms of the Labour Relations Act, but that was corrected and then she was suspended. Seeing that she's not alone in the matter, she's got one senior person and two junior person also there, so there are four all in all in this matter. She was suspended, but she came back, but investigation in terms of departmental then continued, and it's still underway. In relation to the criminal matter, like the National Commissioner is saying, there's something that might be, I don't want to say when, but I must say that the anti-corruption unit did take that case, and they are at a very advanced stage. Today or tomorrow, anytime soon, the four people will be appearing, hopefully in court, because I think the stage at which it is now, I am very, very much satisfied, and then I does brief the National Commission in relation to that. The matter received an attention, and then soon we'll be seeing something in the issue. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, General. General Duma, you're welcome.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think the National Commission has addressed the issues that were raised with regard to the investigation. However, with regard to the processes for finalization in terms of a disciplinary process, we are on time. I think we will be on time in terms of the processes that have been instituted. If I may just highlight on the CFO side, that the investigating officer has assured that within this month it shall be concluded, and we have already with legal services set aside, because the Lieutenant General will need a presiding officer that comes from outside. We have already put the tribunal ready for the process, so that as soon as we receive the report, the tribunal proceed with the processes. And also safe to say, if while I'm still on this general, to add in trying to address the issue that was asked by Honorable Mike with regard to the identification key deliverable number two of the strategy, where we talk of identification of contract and classification. The committee that was alluded in the contract management strategy that I will be sharing also seeks to make sure that the purpose will be for us to be able to continuously look into the contracts that are put in place and evaluate them in terms of their performance, and also to ensure that if there are irregularities that are happening, we are able to detect them as early as possible, and also to ensure that we address the policy of the government issues of BEE that needs to be taken into consideration, which at this stage they are not as visible as they should. So we seek to ensure that we classify them, we check them, we scrutinize all those contracts and ensure that where there are problems, we are able to submit certain motivations for PAC to relook as and when they continue with the new contract that they shall be putting in place on behalf of the organization. Thank you very much.
There's just an additional question from Alman Mula.
Yes, Chairperson. On the disciplinary matter, for how long is the disciplinary take place? Is it 3 months or what? And what happens if it's 3 months you discipline the person or she's under investigation? What happens if it's 3 months plus with that disciplinary case? Thank you.
Alman Mula, General.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Our disciplinary procedure prescribes that we have 2 months to finalize the process of investigation and ensure that at least a person goes to the hearing between that 2 months. However, if it happens that the process has not yet been finalized within a period of 2 months, but at least maybe the tribunal has started to sit, it provides an extension for 1 month. Thereafter, it should be on the basis of the chairperson whether they are willing to extend the suspension depending on the process of the hearing, how it is unfolding. However, once 3 months has been finalized, the person is supposed to be coming back on work. That's why we're trying to ensure that we push it within the prescribed time frames as provided for in the discipline regulation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Let's go to the other responses. Thank you, General Sitor.
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chair. Yeah, just on this one, we just had to say it depends on the complexity of the case, because some of them they get complicated by lawyers as they come in, and then we follow that. And Honourable Chair, with your permission, General Mukwena will respond to the publishing of tenders as well as the review of the bid committee awarded.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Yes, our bids, all of them are advertised through State Tender Board Bulletin, through government printers, and also on our website. Only when the need arises, we go to all the national newspapers. Thank you. Now, in a case where a tender is awarded and bidders experience some dissatisfaction or are not satisfied, what they normally do, they will write to supply chain management and say, indicate their dissatisfaction. But what we normally do, because we awarded the bid, we advise them maybe, if possible, to liaise with National Treasury, to lay a complaint with National Treasury. But at the same time, we keep a register where all complaints and dissatisfaction raised by bidders, where we register them for audit purposes, and we normally refer them to a National Treasury. Or we advise them maybe to follow a legal process. Currently, there is no a committee where we can sit and reverse the decision of the BEC, but that is what we are doing. Thanks, Honourable Chairman.
Thank you very much, General Sitoni.
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chair. we will look at this mechanism within the contract management strategy so that it is provided for. Then, Honorable Chair, consequence management on irregular expenditure. We are guided by Section 34 of the Public Finance Management Act, and we escalate Section 34 to Section 81 to financial misconduct investigation. And at the present moment, we have linked Section 81 to the discipline regulations, which then means if there's irregular expenditure, someone will always be held accountable because it's from Section 44 to 34, and then to 81. But if that has also amounted to a discipline misconduct, we also activate the regulation. Then, Honorable Chair, General Mugwena will just respond on the triple P compliance.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Yes, all our bids, be it advertisement, be it award, are governed by this Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. And the Auditor General and our internal audit us in terms of this PPFA. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. First thing we'd like to welcome and appreciate the commendation by Honorable Makin. And just also to indicate, I'm sure the centralization approach, Chair, has depleted capacity at grassroots level. And as we bring in the contract management strategy, we also couple it with capacity building at grassroots level. And then again, there has been a dealing between your budgetary planning process and your contract management. You will be having existing contracts, but the budgetary planning does not respond to this particular contract. Now, when you have to execute the contract, the budget doesn't allow it. And part and parcel of the instruction that I've given and what is also reflected in the contract management strategy is the alignment of your contract management to your budgetary planning. That is exercised. Now, firstly, your budget concept is going to reflect which of the contracts you're going to be servicing in the next financial year. And together with the response to the situational demand and your client demand, and I've also related to the modus operandi. And this same question escalates to the concern raised by Honorable Mbele. Maybe there's a number of issues or areas there where we just have to give open and honest answers. I think firstly, while we're dealing with the contract management strategy, the organization also did not have an integrated resource management strategy for several years. Now, for you to get your contract outputs on the ground, your resource management strategy must relate to the availability and alignment of your resource metrics so that when you discharge the one contract, the other contracts as well as your other provisions of your procurement management should relate on the dependency resources that you also need that are dependent on the output of the contract. And I will give this example. It's like acquiring a computer, but you don't have data line capacity. And now, if you want to invoke the contract that gives you the computer, you must have activated the one that deals with your data line capacity. And there's always one that should come before the other. And your resource metrics deals with that, but within your resource management strategy. But I also want then to confirm to the committee that the resource management strategy has also been fully designed and is now running concurrently with the contract management strategy. Then again, on the ground, one of the observations is that we did not necessarily apply the participative management concept, which has also been introduced through the turnaround strategy. what I'm talking here to the committee must be understood by the constable on the ground. And one of the intentions of the turnaround, it's for me to be understood by the constables when they watch me on TV talking to the portfolio committee. If I talk to a strategy, I want the constables to understand that on the ground. But I started that particular process at one stage, was acknowledged by the chair. I have introduced the turnaround vision roadshow, where I go with the executive and talk to management about this vision. And how, what does it mean to the constables? What does these strategies mean to the police station? What is the role of the station commander? What is the role of the cluster commander? And how do we run the organization together? How do we capture their ideas? Because there's some of those constables who have got more brilliant ideas than myself. And how do we capture them? How do we create that space for them? So that vision roadshow is still continuing. Started here in the Western Cape. We're going to be rounding all the 9 provinces. But after all, there's also avenues that they are working on from corporate communication for me to interact with all the members across the country where we can talk about this. Further to that, the localization of the strategic direction. I think now with the turnaround, I said to the steering committee that we spoke about yesterday, I think it's General Zumane, Libya, and Masemun, I said let them go to the ground and let them monitor whether what we say here, is it happening? And if it is not happening, they must take action against the commanders, but guide the junior ones. And therefore, it's going to be a process, but it's a process on which we will continue to be hands-on, but we need to change it. Is a mindset, and it's also a perception, but it's also transformation, because it talks to your white paper, your 1998 white paper on transforming public service delivery. So we will work on it, and we also accept this as an input, and we will also further accept any further input. Then on the cluster commander, Honorable Chair, this question is very interesting because the Honorable Member, in his her last statement, said, you know, this cluster thing, but I was trying to, you get the same from the unions. You also get the same question from some of us, from some of our members. But anyway, I have also issued a directive to the work study to say, if we come up with a structure, a new structure, we must pilot it first. And after the pilot, we must get a review report and check whether is this structure supporting effective policing. If it doesn't, we must review it. All right, it's not been happening as a practice before. It's now introduced. It's going to be happening. I might not relate much on the cluster commander at the present moment because we are actually reviewing the concept with the migration of resources. So we will be able to come back and say, this is the reviewed approach, and this is how we're moving forward with the cluster commander. Our principal approach and our objective is that we want capacity at the police stations, and we want stations to function 10 times more than the clusters. That's where we're going. We'll be able to come back to the committee after the migration process. We're still working together with unions now. On Friday, we've got a workshop with them, and the matter will be escalated to the SSPC. We just make sure that we follow the labor process correctly. But we are going to run it first as a 12-month pilot so that we don't make the same mistake. Thank you, Chair.
I think that's all the responses. I've got just one issue in terms of the contract concept, and I think General Buma also referred to that. The concept of evergreen contracts, contracts running for decades, and with our proper assessment and linking to budget plans, are you also assessing that, also the issues you've raised, the areas of concern and current investigations, are you also looking at that? Other members, I just want to get an indication, members, Honourable Mbele, Honourable Ramaphosa, that's the final round, I think.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the Commissioner and the team for the responses. I do heartily welcome the Commissioner's indication of the measures and changes being put in place to improve effectiveness against the backdrop of the concessions of what had been mismanagement and non-application of what should have been the basics. So I think the committee will track that going forward. But just two, maybe one exhortation, which the Commissioner will remember me saying before, but I think it's relevant to this map, to this theme, and then also a question. The first is to perhaps remind the Commissioner and the team that there is a whole ecosystem of entities and mechanisms that can and do support and lighten the load of SAP's management when it comes to monitoring, oversights, and having a finger on the pulse. You've got the secretariat and through it operating through the provincial secretariats who do a whole host of oversights and monitoring and generate reports and feed information like the policing needs and priorities reports that can then link to your budget planning and strategy reviews and so on. You've got, at station level, you've got the CPFs, and I have heard smatterings here and there where the experience of CPFs is that station management is resistant to their inputs, to their participation, and to the value add they can bring, because they are the link to communities. At least some of their members are people who are doing the voluntary patrolling and can then tell you, hey, that hotspot's, you know, behind this green belt, that's an issue. And then VisPol can then proactively be part of a solution. So using those other stakeholders and having a partnership policing approach, and I think that's an idea that must filter through all the levels and will certainly assist the Commissioner and his team in their work to use the inputs and the insights that other role players do have. So I just want to put that back on the table. But my question, Chair, is in terms of both the examples we heard about the members who are already starting to be, call them, you know, purged of the system. I know there's this word that comes in every now and then that becomes du jour when we talk about purification and that sort of thing. But basically, you know, enforcing accountability and cleaning out the SAPs. Could we get an indication of where the majority of the problems seem to reside in terms of those three bands that General Mgwena outlined? So is most of the fiddling happening in that sub-300K category, the between 300 and 500, or upwards of 500? Because I can guess at which band is more vulnerable to fiddling, but obviously the temptation to fiddle would be at the higher levels because that's where the bigger sums of money are. So has there been an analysis of that? Because that'll help to guide and shape a way of tackling this. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. just one question, and I'm sure it may have been answered earlier in a different form. But what I want to understand, General, is the relationship between yourself, which is the Department of Police, as well as the Department of Public Works, with regard to the need and accommodation issues. in terms of your specification and in terms of what they offer. In the past, we have gone over this discussion that your request is not necessarily met with the same specification. You are given what is available, or sometimes you are even directed to take anything that is available. Now, the question I want to ask is whether that relationship and that understanding that the police needs are not just like any other department's needs in terms of the accommodations, particularly on leasing. What comes to mind as I'm talking about this issue is the famous Free State VIP building that has gone for probably over 2 years or without resolution. Whether that relationship has been sorted out. And I can remember both Generals Tolle at some point dealt with this, and General Mukwena and everybody. So I'm asking that question, whether that relationship has now been sorted out, is now everybody understands your needs and they comply accordingly. And if whether this albatross of the Free State and the Free State properties, giants are now able to solve this problem. That's really just my one question, Chair. Thank you.
Just on that issue, I think we discussed it in the previous meeting, and I've also talked to the new Chair of Public Works, and we'll have a joint meeting when we come back, you know, but Jenny is also welcome to give his input. Honourable Abatsi.
Chair, when I was talking about the cluster commanders, I'm not referring to it should be done away with. I'm merely saying it must be capacitated and it should have teeth. That's all I'll say. Thanks, Chair.
Members, any other questions on the presentations and input? Thank you, members. General.
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chair. I will first allow General Mukwena to take the first bite on the evergreen contract.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, you know, this thing has been going on for years. We fully agree. But with the new contract management strategy that the National Commissioner is bringing in, he's going to lay off this burden on the Divisional Commissioner Supply Chain Management, because it will have more power now. And in this committee that I'll be reporting, they'll be able to say, you know, to the members, the head of acquisition, myself, and everybody who's involved in this procurement process, to ask and say, but why is this contract evergreen? What is the problem? We will be able to suggest to the committee, for example, if I may go back to the to example that I gave earlier, forensic, for example, where you find that machines were deliberately bought and locally you have only specific DNA kit that matches them, that are compatible to that machine, and nobody. Now, with that kind of a committee put in place, it weighs more weight. We'll be able to say, discard those machines. Let's sell them at an auction home so that we bring in the machine that will accommodate multiple sources of service providers. That, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I'm excited because the National Commissioner has established this committee, which I'll be able to report to, which will give me more power to say, this thing must stop. We cannot forever have one contract running for 15 years. The one that I gave, for example, previously. It's not the only one. You have a number of them that have been running, but it's so difficult if it's a one-man show without the help of the executive of the organization. And I'm excited, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we have you up.
We've got a commitment that all those evergreen contracts will be properly evaluated.
With your permission, Chair Temba Vuma wants to add.
Thank you very much, Chair. We have actually started the process where we, especially those end users that have got a lot of them called solar supply, I've given them directives that they need to go and check and evaluate in terms of the market and research the market, whether why can we say this is a sole supply? Or is this maybe when it started at a time, it might have been a sole supply, but the market has since grown. Maybe we have such other suppliers within South Africa that are delivering the same services that you are currently saying they are the sole supply. So the process has already started. And we're saying we'll also, where there are maybe some challenges, we also involve the end users, because to assist us in terms of market research, so that before we finalize or we carry on, we are able to, we are convinced that we are on the right track. We are not going to repeat what has been the norm within the South African Police Services, where we are advantaging some of the suppliers at the expense of the total market that is out there. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chair. Yeah, maybe, yeah, also adding, we thought this lifetime principle is within the political environment where you have lifetime presidents, but here we've seen lifetime suppliers. So, so I think that's what we want to put to an end with the contract management studies. But two, there's also government policy changes in the process. If your contracts do not adopt that, then it means government is not going to achieve the implementation of that policy. So therefore, the contract management strategy need to be flexible and follow the direction that government is giving. So here there's been several government policy changes. Among others, it's the economic empowerment of the disadvantaged. Yep. But then this process did not allow that to take place because it was a little bit of the law of the jungle, survival of the fittest, because the bigger suppliers, when the smaller one came, what we also find is that the bigger one bought the status of the others. Then you find 21 companies, all of them one owner, one director. So I think that's how, but then I also want to repeat again that contracts must respond to modus operandi. If the modus operandi bypass the contractual output, I think we need to review that particular contract. It's no longer helping us to improve policing. Then Chair, on the CPF, I think firstly, would like to buy the input by the honourable member, and just say, I think even yesterday I spoke about the operationalization of the community policing strategy. In the community policing strategy, that platform is provided, and we are now in a process of implementing it, but part and parcel of implementing the strategy, which is a principle which, with all strategies, we start from the performance management alignment. We're going to be saying to station commanders, it's not a discretion, it's an obligation, it's a performance obligation. And we're also going to measure it. So first we're going to enforce it through the performance management system, but we're also going to enforce it through the monitoring and evaluation of the strategy, with clear, that is role definition, but also the development and upgrading of community policing, which relate to the CPFs, will also be talking to the strategy. And finally, on the same, we're also shifting CPFs away, firstly, from what you could call politics or petty budget and resource complaints, shifting them to community policing, and we're going to fund community policing so that they are able to implement. So I think that particular strategy will not take long to also make a turn to the portfolio committee, and we'll make sure that it is implemented.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Chair. Just a very quick and small, well, quick and small but important caution and perhaps advice to the Commissioner. I think I do welcome that there'll be financial support to CPFs, but can I ask, please, fund activities, not positions. If you fund positions, it's going to turn into petty factional fights for access to positions to get money, but you must fund activities so people must work in order to tap into the funds. Yeah. Thanks very much for the input. I'm going to fund community policy through crime prevention. So the budget will be allocated to crime prevention, and crime prevention will prioritize community policy activities. We take the advice of the same principle. And then, Chair, I would, with your permission, allow General Gwena to respond on where the problem lies in terms of the ban, the biggest problem within the 500, the categories. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. It is true what Honourable Mbele has said. In the past, National Supply Chain Minister didn't have a say insofar as the delegation of Provincial Commissioner is concerned. What they did there in terms of supply chain management was on their own. But what the National Commissioner has brought about, he says in terms of the methods of our resources, even if the requirements are less than 300,000, they must be communicated to National Supply Chain Management. The importance of doing this, let me give an example of what happened previously. A budget will be given to the Provincial Commissioner maybe for bulletproof vest, but it has been since central. Instead of directing that resources to get that bulletproof resistant vest or handcuff, you'll find it elsewhere. Because they did not submit their procurement plan in terms of the delegation that has been given to them. But with a new procurement strategy, they will be forced now, and we will have control of it. So we will be able to ensure that the provincial commissioner does not just utilize funds allocated to him or her as she pleases, but will be saying to her, no, but there is a shortage of, for example, tires or furniture. So instead of utilizing these funds for party, for example, year-end function, buy furniture. I don't know if I answered Honorable Ben. Honorable
Yes, I'm partly answered, Chair. There's just the more analytical part of my question, and if they don't have the info, that's fine. But it was just to also asking about where has been the majority of the fiddling between those bands. And I'm talking number of incidents, not necessarily the value of the irregularities.
Maybe if you don't got it now, General, we can get it in writing. But is that fine, Honourable? Thank you very much, General Stolle. You've got something still there.
Thanks. It's just the last question about the relationship with public works. I think let me start by saying it's good, but I'm not sure whether it is not at personal level. And I actually wanted also to relate on the comment by Honorable Mark, and we're not sure how we can be assisted. I think firstly we would be prepared to share the strategy as a best practice if it so become. But the fact that we're going to adopt this strategy is going to expose more wrongs with other dependency public sector stakeholders, public works being the number one. Because one of the situations that we want to change here is to minimize the national security risk through contract management. But now I must then say to the committee that we've got leased police stations. A police station that is under lease has got a national security risk. And you've got buildings that are occupied by CI and DPCI under lease. Now, with the contract management strategy, we want to down manage the lease and then so that we can increase the sovereignty of the state. Yeah, because we also have a situation that occurred in KZN. The lease, the owner locked the offices, so the dockets and quite a lot of other face value documents, including equipment, they were locked in the building. The lease owner has got the keys. The detectives are outside. And then there's murder dockets, there's dockets that talks to drugs, and so you can just understand the level of the risk. So if maybe public works would be having a similar mechanism like us, we could then be able to relate. Because to them, if we say we want to down manage the lease that is contract, to them that's not a priority and they see no problem. Yes, so, but when we speak to them, the level of cooperation is high, but the understanding of the security risk is below zero. Hence, they treat us as normal. But we will also even go to an extent of presenting the strategy to them and also outline to them what we intend to achieve and how they can assist and support us. But they are our biggest dependency also on contract management. And CETA is second. So I think we will relate on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. We're coming to the end of the part of this part of the agenda. We've still got one item left. I want to thank the National Commission and his team. We welcome the fact that there is a procurement strategy and a contract management strategy now in place. It's quite important. SAPS again receives 11% of the national budget. We've got 52,000 vehicles, and you must provide equipment for nearly 200,000 people. So it's a big big allocation, and of course the importance of preference procurement is quite critical going forward, but we also welcome the fact that the National Commission is cleaning up the environment, the disciplinary steps that's been taken against even people at the Lieutenant General level. We take note of the appointment of Acting CEO, but I think as Honourable Ramadakane indicated, we need a solution to that going forward, but of course we will allow the processes to follow and also the new structure. But it's important that there is stability in that environment. We will, of course, monitor the situation going forward. Thank you very much. We'll give an opportunity for the general, this team, to leave, and then we'll just ask the chair of the SAPS Transformation Task Team, Reverend Kele Meane, and his team just to join us. Thank you.